Well, hello everyone, and welcome back, of course, to the Research Talks podcast here from Stockbox with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. So we're all back together after a hot week. Dan came back from holiday to very hot UK, didn't you, Dan? But we got through the week.
Yeah.
Not much going on in the markets of note, really, I don't think.
No, it's just it's been quite quiet on the news flow, as is always the case this time of year, isn't it? But yeah, the macro markets continue to sort of maybe drift a little bit lower as we try and work out what's going on with US Iran and how that's going to affect Fed's decisions and the other central banks. I've noted, unhappily, that Bitcoin's continue to drop down, which is which isn't good to see given how I bought basically at the top of the market. But gold dipped below 4,000 earlier in the week. I say dipped, it was probably more of a sort of few hour thing rather than just briefly, but it seems to have jumped back up again, and I maintain pretty confident that longer term we're still in a bull market. All the Rick rules of the world seem to think we are still, so trying to look at these sort of macro developments as a bit of shorter medium term noise to the longer term trend of moving upwards, and looking forward to what we see in that respect, perhaps after the summer's gone and people are putting out more news.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, it's only going to probably get more quieter, isn't it? But Alan, anything? I know you struggle in the heat as well. How was your week? Anything of note worth mentioning?
Well, I think to echo Dan's sentiments, really, Mark, I think the ambient heat this week seemed to reflect the markets. Everything seemed to not grind to a halt, but there was just a lack of activity and very little going on. Although, crypto, obviously, Bitcoin has continued to fall. That's also reflected in other crypto stocks as well, or coins. I'm averaging into Bitcoin, as I think I've said to everyone, and that had a very good run the week before, but it's come back a bit now. So yeah, my stocks into really trodden water this week. Not a great deal happening, and also very little to report on the company news front as well.
Well, I think this is the time where you can take a bit of a break and look at perhaps what you can come back to sort of throughout the end of August into September. So today, Dan, you're going to focus on FDR for us because, of course, they're about to start drilling, which is, of course, the exciting time of any exploration company, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm a holder of FDR, and I think while it's still a very small company, I think it's now moving into a really interesting phase. The share price have had a bit of momentum over the last month or so, but on Friday it dipped back to around 2.6p, which gives the company a market cap of roughly £3.7 million. And at that level, I think the setup is well worth looking at right now, because FDR is now right on the edge of maiden drilling at its Lander West gold target within the wider Celta project in that northern territory of Australia. So this is still early stage, but speculative, and until drilling is done, we don't know what's actually there. But that's the point, really. You know, with junior explorers, the most interesting window is often before the drill bit begins to turn, and when targets are defined, the approvals are in place, teams ready, and the market still hasn't fully priced in the potential. And I think that's where FDR looks to be now. So, like I say, the main focus is Lander West at the moment. This sits within the Stafford Gold Trend. It's a recognized mineralized corridor in the Northern Territory. FDR has been building the case there through a proper sequence of work. It started with historical data, then came airborne magnetics, radiometric surveys. There's a ground-based induced polarization survey. And those data sets have now been integrated with geology, geochemistry, and past drilling to refine a set of gold targets for the first RC drill program. So this isn't just, you know, drilling because the company needs news flow. The program's designed to test a number of things: structural and intrusion-related gold targets with shear zones, faults, fault structures, etc. So basically, in plain English, FDR has tried to pull together as much evidence as possible before drilling to maximize its chances of success when it gets in the ground. And that matters because Much of the prospective geology at Llandough West remains effectively untested below 50 metres, so this upcoming programme is expected to be the first meaningful test of the broader gold system at depth. So that's the near-term catalyst. The company is planning an initial Phase 1 RC programme of around 2,000 metres with flexibility to expand towards 3,000 metres depending on results and observation in the field as they go. And yeah, the practical pieces to that end are now all coming together. FDR has appointed GeoDrill Australia as drilling contractor, appointed a local earthworks contractor for access, preparation of the drill pad, has secured key regulatory approvals, and drilling is scheduled to begin in July. So yeah, next month, maybe we'll see an update in the next few weeks. On top of that, the company has now secured an $100,000 Aussie dollar grant from the Northern Territory government. And as Tristan, the CEO, highlighted to me when I spoke to him at the time, that's useful for two reasons. It's non-dilutive funding, which we always like to see, helps support the drilling without issuing more shares. But it also gives the project a bit of independent validation. You know, government grant programs don't guarantee exploration success, but they do suggest the technical case has been reviewed and judged worthy of support, and it opens the door to future collaboration, maybe more grants, more support. The other important development is the appointment of Dr. David Rawlings as exploration manager. This is a significant hire for a company of FDR's size. David has more than 30 years of exploration experience across Australia, which includes extensive experience in the Northern Territory. He's worked across uranium, gold, lithium, base metals, lots of other commodities. He's been in projects, you know, all the way from early stage exploration through to development. I spoke to him and Tristan this week, and one of the things that really stood out was that he actually knew the ground at Llandough West already. He said he held the tenements himself around 15 years ago, but, you know, the opportunity wasn't quite right at the time for him to do the meaningful work needed to see its full potential. So he's not coming in cold here. He knows the region, he knows the project. And he'll be involved directly as drilling gets underway, which is, you know, it's important to have that sort of on-the-ground experience, because first-pass drilling is rarely just, it doesn't go in a straight line. There's lots of things you need to deal with in the field. You need someone who can react quickly, interpret what's coming out of the holes, and adjust priorities if needed. So for a small explorer, that kind of hands-on technical experience can make a real difference, especially when it's backed by Tristan, who's himself a geologist and is heading out soon to support the program. So that's the core setup. FDR's trading at around a £3.7 million market cap. It has defined targets. It's got contractor approvals, grant funding, strengthened the technical team, and now it's heading into drilling. Yet the share price is still around the same level as it was when this story was way less advanced. And that's the valuation point. Of course, got to always say the risk is clear. The drilling might not hit anything meaningful, the targets may not be validated, but if the drilling does show signs of a gold system, or even those early indications that FDR can go and follow up, then from this valuation, the company could move quickly. And of course, it's important to note that there's more to the story than the gold at Llandough West. Salta also has rare earth, uranium and lithium potential. David specifically talked about the broader multi-commodity opportunity and how modern geophysics could change the understanding of uranium prospectivity in the area when we spoke. And then there's Wallal in Western Australia. This remains earlier stage right now in terms of the current focus, but it still gives shareholders exposure to gold copper potential, a potentially very meaningful scale. So, you know, while Llandough West drilling is the immediate catalyst, the company does have other shots on goal that I'm sure it will be going on to pursue alongside or just after this gold opportunity at Llandough West. So to round out, the point is simple. FDR isn't expensive. It's right at the start of a drill campaign, and the last few updates have made the story more credible rather than less. The company's really delivering on what it said it would do. Still speculative, but $3.7 million with drilling about to begin and the strengthening team and lots of angles, exploration angles in the background. This looks like the kind of early stage setup that could get very interesting very quickly if the first holes deliver. So yeah, next few weeks, next couple of months will be very interesting to see what comes out of FDR, and looking forward to catching up with Tristan and David again soon.
Well, I'm sure you'll be keeping tabs on them, Dan. I know you follow them quite closely, and of course, it is as you say. Yeah, this is the best time to be involved in any mining exploration company when they get active on the ground. So, very pleased to hear what you think about them, Alan. I know you've followed them as well since day miners, haven't you, before they even were, you know, the spin out of POW.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, I like Dan, I remain a shareholder in FDR, you know, big believer in what Tristan and the guys are doing there. And obviously there was the disappointment initially at Wallal. I think the company came to market on that, and it was a bit of a binary outcome, of course, you know, and as often is the case. But I think now the company and the offering has matured. You know, we've got, and I think bringing David Rawlins into help and oversee the project is a great move. You know, this guy is hugely experienced, and obviously his prior knowledge of the project will be hugely invaluable. So I think it's very much on the cusp of great things. Once the drill goes into the ground, that's the truth machine. But of course, they do plan to return to Wallal at some point, and of course the company's also got other assets in its locker as well. You've got Braeside West and Ripon Hills too, so yeah, plenty more to come.
Okay, so Alan, talk to us about Time Finance then. I know we've covered them before, but bring us up to speed on what's going on.
Okay, so Time Finance, I have covered the company before, and it looks to me as though it's reached an inflection point. The company, of course, is London listed. The Epic code is Time, TIME. It's AIM listed, not main market. And the shares have really had a very strong month. You know, 29th of May, the shares are trading at 41p, and they're now trading at just under 50p. Things are starting to happen there. So the company is it's a provider of business finance, as the name would indicate, commercial and business finance. It provides asset finance, invoice finance, loans for vehicles and plant and so on. It's received numerous awards over the years as best finance provider from Business Money Facts, amongst others. It's seen real growth over the past year, driven by asset-based lending, which of course is where the company secures the lending on inventory, stock, equipment, or property. So typical examples of some of the lending the company takes, the sort of lending the company gets involved in. There's a family aggregate business the company lent $1.3 million to in South Wales. They provide aggregates and topsoil. The company provided funding to them, which was secured on the asset and the property. There's a taxi and coach company that were lent $540,000, again secured on the assets. Seven Brothers Brewery were lent $250,000 against invoice financing, and also another example, Shetland Knitwear, a £75,000 facility there on invoice financing. Provides lending in many, many different ways. Now, I did cover the company when the company published a quarter three trading update in March this year. But since then, things have moved on, and the company's chief executive, Ed Romer, has really got behind the business and taken a good long look at where the company can really grow and where it can really make a difference and really start to turn the performance around for investors. And based on the strength of the last month's performance, I think it's starting to work. So the full results to May 31st, the company announced its 20th consecutive quarter of growth in its lending book with record profits and revenues. Its gross lending book over the period rose by 15% to 250 million. So that was a milestone in itself. Now it works with partners and funding partners to accumulate this gross lending book, but also it does its own book lending and own book deal origination. That part of the business rose by 26% to 122 million. Of course, it's got in a sense more control over that, so that's a good sign. Net assets in the business grew by 14% to 50 million. Revenues into the company rose 4% to 38 million, with pre-tax profits up 8% to 8.5 million. Now, of course, with any business like this, you factor in bad debt write-offs. It's part and parcel of the lending industry. Now, bad debt write-offs for the company is stable at 0.9% of the average gross lending book. That's down from 1% previously. So the move and the growth in own book deal origination is starting to impact on that on the net bad debt write-offs, which is a good sign. Deferred income grew by 17% to 31 million. And that means, of course, when cases are closing out, they don't close out within the fiscal year, so they're punted onto the following year. So that provides strong visibility already going forward into the new year. So that's a total of 31.3 million already in the new year. As indicated by the clients I sort of outlined at the start of the talk, the focus for the group is very much now on secured lending. 95% of new lending and also over 89% of the total lending book is now secured lending. So that will also help to impact on the net bad debt write-offs, which of course is ultimately what the company wants to see. It doesn't want to see any net bad debt at all on the books. So the chief exec has come in and really sort of made an impact in that regard. The company has also extended its long-term funding facilities with key partners. It's now got headroom of 80 million plus going forward. So the company really has had a very strong year. And Ed Rimmer said in his comments, he said, at the end of the year, all-time high revenues, improved margins, record profits, significant milestone on the lending book, hitting that 250 million. The company's got a proven simple model that continues to deliver, and we're confident that the group remains appropriately positioned on its growth strategy and well-placed with good visibility to build long-term value for shareholders. So, that, you know, good comments. I mean, if we look at the share price performance over the past year, the shares have traded at a high of 66p, a low of 40p. Currently, just as I say, coming back to that 50p mark again. So anyone picking the shares up during May has had a good run. But even so, I think with the new chief exec in charge, with that visibility, you know, with that net bad debt coming down all the time and the tools in place to further impact on that, I think it wouldn't be unreasonable to assume that these shares will continue to move back towards the highs of 66p plus.
Well, Dan, over to you then. And Halo Minerals, recently listed LSE company who you've been speaking to. What's the story here?
Yeah, Halo is one I wanted to come back to after Equity Development published a pretty punchy initiation note earlier this month. It was written by Nick Hatch, who I'm speaking to next week about it, actually. So we'll dig into the assumptions in more detail then. But the headline point is pretty simple. Equity Development has put a 46p fair value estimate on Halo versus its recent share price of around 9 to 10p. So a lot of upside there. And before that interview, I think it's worth quickly revisiting the investment case and why the note sees such a big valuation gap. The first thing to say is that Halo isn't a normal junior copper explorer. This isn't a company drilling holes in hope of finding a new deposit from scratch. Its flagship asset is the Playa Verde copper gold tailings project in Chile. So the plan is to reprocess legacy mine waste material that has already been mined and deposited historically, but still contains recoverable copper and gold. That gives Halo a different risk profile. Tailings projects are usually better defined than greenfield exploration projects. The material is already there, it can be sampled, modeled, and the path to production can often be simpler and quicker than building a conventional hard rock mine from scratch. So that doesn't obviously make it risk-free, but it does make it different. And that's the key point with Halo. Playa Verde is already a technically advanced project. It has a 53.4 million ton JRC compliant resource grading 0.24% copper. Within that, 32.2 million tons is classified as ore reserves, high confidence. The project also has an approved environmental impact assessment, and Halo is now working to optimize the DFS and move towards a final investment decision later this year, I believe. The current plan is to dredge the tailings, process around 5 million tons per year, and produce copper cathode, copper concentrate, and byproduct gold. At full capacity, production is expected to be around 8,640 tons of copper per year. For a company with a market cap of roughly £10 million, those numbers are not small, and the economics are what really drive the broker note. Using the Competent Persons Report base case, which includes the oil reserves plus 2.6 million tonnes of additional mineral resources, Playa Verde has a post-tax NPV of $164.1 million and an IRR of 51.4%. And even on the oil reserve only case, the project still has a post-tax NPV 10 of $154.1 million and an IRR of 50.9%. That's why the valuation gap stands out. Equity development is not simply taking that project's NPV and comparing it with Halo's market cap. It's 46p fair value estimate adjusts for the capital needed to build the project and the future asset payments due to Central Asian Metals once production milestones are hit. So it's a more grounded valuation than just saying, yeah, the project NPV is much bigger than the market cap. And even after those adjustments, the gap is still very large. There's also an attractive commodity price angle here. The CPR used assumptions of $5.30 per pound copper and $4,300 per ounce gold. The recent spot prices have been materially higher, particularly for copper. Halo recently highlighted that applying the same CPR methodology at around $6.35 per pound copper, while keeping the same gold price assumption, would indicate an NPV 10 of around $241 million and an IRR of 73%. So that shouldn't be treated as guaranteed value because copper prices move, as we all know, assumptions change, and Halo still has plenty of work to do, but it does show the leverage that Playa Verde could have to stronger metal prices. So from here, the next steps are pretty clear to me. Halo's targeting an optimized DFS and final investment decision the second half of the year. It started the maritime concession process, filed for beach mining permissions, and is progressing development funding discussions. If all goes to plan, its production could potentially start in the next couple of years. The story now is about execution. Can Halo complete the updated work and secure the permits? Can it put the funding package together? And fundamentally, can it move Playa Verde from a strong technical case into a finance development project? Those are the risks and the questions that remain unanswered, but that's also, like we were saying with FDR, that's also where the opportunity sits. If the company keeps advancing Playa Verde towards FID, the market may start to take that valuation gap a lot more seriously. And next week, speaking to Nick Hatch should be a good chance to test the assumptions behind that note in a bit more detail and understand exactly what he thinks could close the gap from here. So I'm looking forward to that. And keep an eye out. I'm planning to publish that hopefully towards the second half of the week so we can perhaps highlight that again next week.
Sure. Okay, Dan, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's good to see a new IPO. I mean, there's been a few sort of IPOs, haven't there, I think, recently, and some moves over from Aquis to AIM, which is a good sign, right? Because, of course, we talked for a long time about the exodus. Exodus is
the
AIM.
Yeah, the exodus from Aquis to AIM.
Exactly, yeah. So it's good to see some more IPOs coming through. And of course, I think there'd be a raft of miners going down the dual listing route as well over in North America. And we've, of course, got inbound interest from Australia as well, looking to attract European investors. So I think this is all good signs, I think, of bodes well for the sector. So it's good to hear that story, Dan. And hopefully there's more of those sort of newish stories that we can be picking up on over the next few years, hopefully.
Definitely.
Okay, Alan, finish us off then with Manolet Partners, please.
Manolet Partners. So we've spoken about Manolet, of course, on a number of occasions, and it's gone through quite a sea change over the past year. Lost two key board members in 2025, and the new chief executive, Mina Holton, has really had her work cut out to try and turn the company around. So Manolet are the UK's leading insolvency litigation financing company. It does the whole thing in-house, provides legal services, everything in-house, and it works in partnerships with insolvency practitioners and lawyers to resolve issues, and it buys insolvency claims and basically funds the system through to completion. Of course, earns its commissions on the outcome. It's a simple process. The company has got a very good standing within the industry. In fact, a number of awards, the industry awards, are provided by Chambers. And on the Manley Company website, you can see that for six consecutive years, 2021 to 26, Manley has been ranked band number one by Chambers and Partners for litigation funding. So it's very much the go-to company. And in fact, that is the most recent announcement from the company as well. So Manley's chief executive, or current chief executive, is also a five times band one ranked lawyer for litigation funding, and also their general counsels Ronan Butler and Andrew Murphy are also ranked individuals. So you're getting the best of the best when you go to this company. But it's not been about Mina Holton. It is now, but the company was very much driven by the founder, Steve Cooklin. And if we look at the share price chart, so over the past year, the company has traded as high as 118 pence, as low as 33p. And indeed, it hit that high in September last year. Now, the founder, Steve Cooklin, stepped down from the business in August last year, and also the prior CFO, Mark Taverner, stepped down in April. So there's been something of a sea change within the company. Also, as the company markets get to grip in life, sort of post Steve Cooklin. That's not to say that the company was completely about him, because it's not. And certainly, the numbers that the company announced recently show that there's a very healthy and thriving business there. But I think there is an opportunity for investors in this company, because that change has seen the market capitalization of the company fall from something like 23 million down to the current 16.5 million. So the funds that the company is generating, I do believe, will see that share price return to its former highs. So the most significant announcement of the past few months, in June, the company announced its full year results to March 31st, and the results show evidence of the new board strategy. At the same time as Mina Holton came in as chief executive to take over from Steve Cooklin, they also hired Will Sawyer, who's a very experienced chief finance officer. He's FD on several other publicly listed companies. So you've got a very strong new board in place taking this company forward. And certainly the realized revenues that were announced by the company for the year to March 31st, 27.9 million, pretty much in line with the previous year. But some larger case completions, and of course, the revenue, where the years or the time the revenues fall into the company, are dependent on the outcome of the legal cases. Some large case completions have fallen into full year 2027, which is why they obviously weren't on the previous year's numbers. Higher gross margins were reported at 37%, up from 32% previously, driven by cartel settlement during the first half of the year and a series of higher case completions in the second half. What do I mean by cartel? Well, in 2016, the EU Commission ruled that European truck manufacturers had engaged in illegal price fixing, and that spawned a series of legal challenges which were funded by Manley. So some of those cases are still ongoing, and the outcome will be realised probably in the current year, maybe even going up into full year 2028. But the company noted strong cash receipts, 26.6 million, up from 25.5 million last year. Net debt increased slightly to 11.5 million from 11.1 million. The increased cash receipts were offset by investments into new cases. There's also a 1.8 million provision made for two debtors on the balance sheet. The company is confident that the balance of 4.7 million will be recovered. And most significantly, the full year order book has increased in value to 67 million from 49 million previously. That's up 37%. And that's largely come about as a result of new management making three new hires in the business team. So these new hires have worked hard. They brought new cases in. The average forward order book claim has also increased as a result of these new hires coming in to 158,000 from 124K previously. Also resulted in net asset value of the group rising by 3% to 42 million. So all these numbers are pushing the right way, but the share price is really at a multi-year low at the current 36p. So I think we're going to see a turnaround in the company in the coming months and in the coming year. The company's reported growth in momentum, value of new cases up 23% year on year, and of course with that new enlarged team to drive volumes and case value, we're going to see fully 2027 improve across the board. A positive start to the year already, 6 million in new case signings, 4 million in completions in the first 2 months. The cartel completions will be worth 10 million on this current year to the company. The company set out a series of new targets I think give investors something to focus on. They are aiming to grow realized revenues by 50% as opposed to current, which that will see a significant increase in value in share price value, and also improved adjusted realized pre-tax profits to 12%. So I think with all the factors in place, the new board of Mina Holton and the new FD Will Sawyer have got the necessary pieces in place to drive business harder, to see this 50% growth in realized revenues from where we are now. And that in itself should see the share price return certainly some way towards, if not all the way towards, the previous year highs of 113p.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you, Alan, again, for talking to us about a couple of different companies there, and Dan for covering, of course, a couple of miners as well. So I think next week is a bit cooler, which would be nicer for everyone, I think.
Hopefully.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, well, have a good weekend, everyone, and we'll speak next week, see what next week brings.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, guys.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter, and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programs at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.